and welcome to the All Japan Women's Destiny podcast. I'm your host, JD. Welcome to another episode as we go through the history of All Japan Women's Professional Wrestling through the classics episodes that you can find on various places of the internet. I vastly encourage to follow along and learn and enjoy the history of this just awesome women's wrestling promotion of the past. This is a spin-off in conjunction with the Red Leaf Retrocast. That is the proper episode where these come from. We hope you enjoy our audio and our discussions over the various wrestlers and the matches in which you go through the ages. If you like what you hear and you want more content, please consider checking out the Patreon. That is patreon.com/redleafretrocast, all one word, where we also cover LLPW, various other women's wrestling promotions of the past, and the project that the whole reason it exists is the Joshi 2010s journey, where we go through coming out of the dark ages of Joshi professional wrestling and really learning and having fun with wrestlers that we're very familiar with to this day to ones that we may have missed out on. I hope you enjoy the audio you're about to hear covering AJW. And if you want more, please, again, consider signing up to the Patreon and leaving us reviews over at iTunes, Spotify, and the like, all your favorite podcasting outlets in which you listen to AJW and the Red Leaf Retrocast. Enjoy. And we're keeping it going. We're playing another drop. Let's go. All right, double drop time. It's All Japan Women Wrestling, AJW Destiny time. Here we go. We're, 91 episodes into this sucker? 92? We're in 1994 on the road to the Dome. The retirement tour of Akira Hokuto is kind of the prime focus. Bull Nakano will be leaving in the summer for the WWF to develop a cocaine addiction of sorts. You think I'm kidding. But 1994 has spurred on some interesting developments, and this roster is heavily motivated because they know the Dome's coming. There's the Tonya Harding like publicity stunt that they're running, which is still making headlines, where Tonya Harding doesn't even know what AJW is, but the Matsunagas being the scummy businessmen that they were. That's what we're doing here. The classics really skip over a lot from March to June, but I was able to find a TV episode from an Okinawa tour that kind of got some buzz because there was a couple excellent matches on this show. One in particular, I might be my favorite of the year so far. But anyways, again, you notice a heavy motivation influence, and a lot of these wrestlers are, you know, 5-6 years in now, maybe even more, depending on who they are, and they're really hitting their stride as a wrestler, as a character, getting charisma across in the ring. They're meshing well together. Amazing how if you don't have to retire at like 25, you get better in the ring the longer you're in it. Yeah, it's weird how that works. So there's a lot going on there. I will go over to the Observer real quick. Just a minor notes. Meltzer talks a lot about the Tonya Harding scandal some more. I kind of went over that in detail last few podcast episodes. But the point is, I found a little snippet from the Okinawa tour. They had three straight legit sellouts, which was confirmed by multiple sources. This was not one of those 2,000-seat venues that they stuck 2,500 people in and claimed standing room only, and you see a bunch of empty seats. No, not that. This was an island tour, three straight sellouts of 3,300 people, so very good numbers there, especially in considering where they went. And the idea of this entire tour was a tag title type tournament situation, where they had a tag tournament for an Okinawa trophy to kind of get people to come multiple nights. And they also had a UWA tag title match, not the main event, curious enough, to highlight the first night of this tour. Let me make sure it was the first night, actually. I want to double check that. It was... it was the first night of the tour. And the last night was on April 1st, 1994, where it was finished with a finals of Manami Toyota and Saki Asagawa defeating Takakao Inoue and Toshio Yamada. So I couldn't confirm this, but it sure seemed like it was kind of random draw tag teams. And I found like a bad version fan cam of this particular third night show. Not good enough to go out of your way and watch, but it looked interesting enough when you got matches like Mima Shimoda and Tomoko Watanabe going at it. That kind of stuck out to me, but again, the quality wasn't good enough to even get anything out of it. But yeah, that was the highlight of the tour. The UWA tag titles are being more focused on now that LCO. I mean, this push of LCO is incredible. Hokuto being on her way out and her immense star power was so felt, and so much of the promotion was focused on her. And I know people kind of point to Aja Kong in 92, got the big torch passing from Bull Nakano. And while that's true as champion, that's not, I still have not seen that as she's the main eventer, right? She's the focus. We haven't gotten to that point yet. It's still very much kind of a tag team focused promotion as we transition. And it's still very much interpromotional. And I keep pointing out that Aja Kong's not in those main events. However, we're heading into April here. And now we're starting to see Aja Kong as a focused person in this promotion, as the single star. Because Hokuto and Bull Nakano are going away. Now we're seeing Aja Kong in that role. And to be fair, she's been heavily protected and in big featured matches throughout her like a year and a half long reign at this point. So people do buy into her. And she's developing more charisma herself. So she's not the only one stepping up, right? You got LCO stepping up. You got Takako Inoue reaching a new gear. You got Yumiko Hota reaching a new gear in her wrestling style, which hasn't gone unnoticed by me. And that's very enjoyable. Who is actually kind of taking a step back is Kyoko Inoue and Toshio Yamada. They've stepped back in a lot of ways. They're not really taking the bull by the horns. They're not climbing up the mountain the way I think a lot of people thought at the time. While Manami Toyota's being Manami Toyota, she's flying around the ring. She's still up and down the card. Saki Asagawa is being more featured. She's kind of in that same, I can't say role, but because Manami Toyota actually wins matches, but you get the idea here. So this card kind of represented a lot of that. This is your generation. This is your roster that's going to go through the year up to the dome. And when we get to 95... these people will be established, and the era of Bull and Hokuto will have come and gone on a nice little end tour, end moments, right? It's kind of cult. You get the feeling And that's the feeling I get watching these shows from January 94 till now, heading into April, that this is their direction. We're finishing out our top stars of the late 80s, early 90s, and we're gonna officially kick off in 95, you know, Aja Kong as the person. LCO is your tag team. And then we'll establish the challengers and everyone from there. That's what I get, and I think it's so obvious right now that's the direction we're going. So we begin this show from Okinawa, 3300 sellout, March 30th, 94. It was taped. It hit TV in like mid-April. So this is going to be our best example of that big March show to the big June show. They were kind of running things like this. Kumiko Maekawa defeats Rei Tamada. Nice little rookie singles opener match. I got nothing else to really go into there. Good for development. We'll see what happens as we continue on. Chikako Shiratori defeats Chiprita Asari. I enjoyed this a lot. The big Chiprita Asari story is she goes for that twister, she brains herself, and then loses. So everyone's got her scouted right now, and Chikako Shiratori, she's really stepped into what the role of Takako Inoue was in like 91, 92, where now she's out of the rookie phase. They've got her going into this closer idol-esque persona, while Takako Inoue is developing more of a mean streak side, more of a physical wrestler. So Shiratori's taking that spot, and I think that's a good spot for her, and where she's winning matches now. I enjoyed this. I enjoyed this match a lot. We got a decent little tag match here of Manami Toyota and Suzuka Manami defeating Bull Nakano and Tomoko Watanabe. So Bull Nakano she's hanging out in the mid card, helping out the young Tomoko here. This really felt closer to a late 80s AJW match without blood, but yeah, Toyota and Manami kind of doing their thing, flying around the ring. Even Bull Nakano got busy with a little high flying plancha there, Tomoko. So this was your high flying type match, ironically enough. Bull Nakano's lost a ton of weight, so she's able to move around the ring way easier. But she's definitely beaten up. This so-called quote-unquote reduced schedule isn't doing her any favors. But another enjoyable match, and we got a good little nice show going on here. And then we hit the Toshi Yamada Kairi Ito match. Yamada wins, unsurprising, but Kairi Ito, I'm saying it, she stinks. Like, I don't get it with her. She has no arsenal. It's double foot stomps. She runs the ropes to do the same bullshit over and over again. I'm sick of this woman. Like, Toshi Yamada, I admit she's kind of taken a step back at this point in time. She's not teaming with Toyota a lot. They're not doing their rivalry much anymore. It looks like they finished their kind of story for now. But then watching this, it's a lot of grappling with Yamada. She's trying to kick. Kairi Ito can't sell worth shit. I did not like this at all. This is when I thought Yumiko Hoto was like bad in 1989, 1990, where she just wasn't doing anything to develop. She was just doing her same repertoire over and over again. Didn't matter who she was facing or what the match was. Just never changed. And I'm going to be a little harsh. I think Yamada's kind of developed that same problem as well. She's trying a lot of jump kicks. They miss half the time. I don't know if this woman is like battling injuries or whatnot. I mean, I'm sure she was. It's AJW. You know, can't take a break at all, ever. So that's kind of what we're dealing with here. I just didn't think this match was any good. We move on to the crux of the card. And it's LCO, Mita, and Shimoda defeating the UWA champions, Takako Inoue and Yumiko Hota. 22 minutes this went. 4.25 in the Observer. I'm going 4.5, baby. I adored this match. This was awesome. I talked in January that it looked like LCO was getting their like tag team moves down, you know, the suicide dive into the plancha deal. Standing on their shoulders, doing electric chair drops. They're doing doubles, like top rope superplexes. They had some black and gold gear going on here. They're showing off their legs. They're becoming LCO. And this is cool to see. They're getting better every month. Mita and Shimoda. They're getting more confident. I mean, the second Etsuko Mita hits that Death Valley driver, this crowd goes nuts because they think, oh shit, that person died. There's no way this match is going on. And then Hota will come out of nowhere and boot you in the face to kick you off. That's cool. And speaking of Hota, she's reaching a new level. I think she was not quite understanding how to be the kind of martial arts Chigusa character that she's always tried to emulate. Because she's no good at selling. She's never been that. Unless she like gets like kicked in the head and then she stumbles. But over the last, I would say, 4 months, ever since that hand match, the famous hand match, now something's clicked in her where now she knows like the proper moments to sell and not just be staggered, right? Because there's too often where she's no-selling people and then she'll go over and like boot you in the face really hard, which is kind of cool, but you know, it led to that like Kansai Hota match that I just didn't think was any good. Because it's just two people like not cooperating. At least that's how it comes across. But here, Mita and Shimoda are taking the boots to her, and she's actually like getting up and selling. You know, not really one of her strong suits. Now she's understanding these moments better, and it led to a great tag match. And Takako Inoue was out of her mind. She's like, to me, she's eclipsed Cutie Suzuki at this point in time in '94. Where she's the idol character with an edge. And when she's getting in there with Shimoda and Mita, who are... how much taller are they than Takako? Because, let's see. Takako's 5'4". Yeah, she's pretty small because Shimoda and Mita are like 5'7", 5'8". So, you know, there's 3-4 inches. I know that doesn't sound very tall when I say it out loud, but in terms of Japan and Joshi, let's just go with me on that. So, you know, Takako's doing big like back fists, and she's throwing big forearms. She's booting people in the face when they're on their knees. She's dumping people on their necks. This is good, right? She's hitting cutie specials. The Germans are hitting better, but the ultimate story is Mita and Shimoda have just leveled up as a tag team for the fourth straight month here. And they win these titles. Like I said, I went 4.5 stars in this match. Full 3 easy. This is a must watch. It is the Okinawa March 30th, 94 show. Go out of your way to watch this one. This is highly recommended. Anyway, we get to our main event. Aja Kong and Saki Asagawa continue their little Jungle Jack tandem here, defeating Kyoko Inoue and Reggie Bennett. Reggie Bennett, guys, she has made it to AJW. And unfortunately, this was very much a house show match. They did a main event that it could have been on any show anywhere in Japan. Aja Kong did the karate pose. Saki Asagawa was doing jump kicks where no one was there, then doing a pose. Kyoko Inoue and Reggie Bennett are striking, you know, flexing poses in the middle of the ring. Most of this match was very much them doing a house show stick until a last 5-minute stretch of Bennett and Hasegawa kind of going at each other. In a way, she was kind of a second fiddle. She'd hit her key moves, same with Kong, but very much a non-inspiring type match. Meltzer gave it 3.5. I think that's kind of more than fair. I'm leaning towards that 3 range. You know, I did expect more. The crowd was still into it nonetheless. They're seeing the stars kind of go at each other. Reggie Bennett got over more than probably people realized, even at the time, because she's a big girl. She's a big girl, and she's torture racking bitches. I think it was in the last episode where Reggie Bennett actually won a match with the torture rack, Lex Luger style, and in this one, she put it in again, and I think people bought it because they saw the result maybe in a newspaper or something. So then when she put, like, Hasegawa in this, until Kong kind of came over with a back fist, people thought this match was over. So that got a good pop. We're gearing up to a big June show. Like I said, Kong and Hasegawa won this. It's a house show match, not much worth going into there. But go out of your way to watch that UWA tag title match. That was excellent. Is it my favorite match of 94 so far? It might be. It just might be. That hand match was super good, though. Yeah, I'll have to think about that. Because it was just high energy from start to finish. Exactly what you want out of this era. And that'll do it. I believe the next one will be the big June show from AJW, and we continue on our road to the Dome. And that was AJW Destiny.